This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 32, with maker and founder of MakeSomething.tv, David Picciuto.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Angles of Latitude podcast. This is a show where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing work that matters not only to them, but possibly to the rest of the world. Every Thursday, we publish another conversation about the art and science of truly living a life of passion and how you, too, can do the work you're meant to do. Today's hosts are Layla Ramadian and myself, JC Preston. We're part of the team at New Inceptions, a website dedicated to helping creative entrepreneurs do passion-filled work and, more importantly, connecting them with the resources and community they need to help share their message with others. This session is powered by Fizzle. Yesterday, I wrote a heck of a long and detailed post that I might or might not rewrite. Why would I rewrite it, you ask? Well, because New Inceptions was hacked not too long ago, and after I hit save on WordPress, the screen refreshed and there was my post, about a third of the way complete. I about lost it. It was approaching 2,000 words, and I spent the rest of the night figuring out how to get rid of the corrupted files on the website, which is something I'll probably share in another post and exactly how I did that, because actually in past times where a site's been hacked and I've been called in to take care of it, it can take up to a week to kind of redo everything. From what I can tell, it only took me just a couple of hours, and I might share that with you guys in a future post. Anyway, in this particular post, I wanted to share with you guys this great course I found in there that Corbett Barr put together a couple years ago about how to build an email list. And that's personally something I've been struggling with. However, with that course, I was able to build a game plan on how I wanted to start chasing after 10,000 subscribers. The course was super detailed, talking about everything from knowing how to utilize MailChimp to build autoresponders, to even setting up campaigns and even giving ideas of how you can have your followers leave their email on your website. Anyhow, I'll probably eventually redo the post, but I thought I'd at least mention the course right now. If you want to go check it out for free or any of the other courses they offer on there, you can do so for 2 weeks by going to newinceptions.com/fizzle. After that, first 2 weeks is up, it's only $35 a month. So again, that's newinceptions.com/fizzle. Speaking of Fizzle, one of the things that's talked about on here quite a bit is the 10 archetypes. I'm pretty sure I've talked about it on the podcast before, but it's basically the idea that there are 10 types of online businesses. I know you're probably aware of thought leaders, teachers, and possibly mediapreneurs. I probably haven't heard it called that before, but it's basically when someone just builds a business on affiliation marketing. I'm sure you're also aware that there are retailers, engineers, people who make online membership software, also known as software as a service solutions. However, there are two that I don't know too much about, the artist and the maker. Today, we're talking with David Picciuto, who is the first successful maker online that I've talked to since rebooting New Inceptions this time last year. In fact, on the same week that I launched this podcast, he was on the SPI podcast along with his co-host, Bob Claggett. They talked about their businesses and what they were up to, which I'll have a link for you in the show notes for that particular show. Since then, Dave's been doing a little rebranding. Well, maybe a lot of rebranding. He used to be known as the Drunken Woodworker, and now he's the host of MakeSomething.tv. In today's chat, we'll be talking about the switch of the name, how he got into woodworking as an online business, his successful YouTube channel, and his podcast, and why he believes it's necessary to diversify your brand online. So if working with your hands is something you love to do, but don't necessarily see yourself making a ton of things or throwing them all on a site like Etsy, I really think you'll get a ton out of this particular chat. If that doesn't describe you, I think you'll still be able to resonate with Dave just because so many of us have been in a similar path where he's at. So let's get into this fun chat with Layla and Dave. Stacy and Layla, and we're talking with Dave Picciuto of MakeSomething.tv. Dave is a full-time online content creator, designing, creating, and teaching the art of woodworking. He has a background in art, which he incorporates into his projects. And if you're actually a follower of SBI Podcast, I mean, who isn't? He's someone you might have heard a little bit about back in September of 2015 on there with a friend of his, Bob Claggett. However, I'd rediscovered him through a video called How to Price Your Work. And in that video, he actually describes a very simple technique that you can use to charge clients as any kind of freelancer. So definitely check that out. So Dave, welcome to today's show, man.
Thank you for having me.
Definitely a pleasure. You know, I just want to say that it's a true pleasure in having you here. I mean, you know, you're going to be the first maker that we have on the show, and I'm just kind of curious about your business and everything that you have going on, which it seems like you do have a lot of stuff going on. I know it's changed a little bit since you first started, even your domain.
Yes.
but we'll get to all of that soon enough.
All right.
So I guess the first thing, you know, and this is something that we try to do all the time, as much as possible, unless, you know, it's been stated elsewhere, maybe it's just going to come within this show, is that we kind of dive into people's backgrounds. And you had mentioned in that SPI podcast, and we're just going to take it from where, maybe where Pat left off. You used to work at an ad agency, and you more or less stumbled into woodworking as a business. How did that come about?
It was all by accident. So I was working, like you said, full-time at the ad agency as a web developer and videographer. And I also did photography for a hobby. Mm-hmm. And I was getting ready for an art show and thought I'd have some of my photos professionally framed, and was kind of shocked at the cost.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I took woodshop in high school 20 years ago. I could probably do this. So I went out and bought a miter saw. Mm-hmm. And quickly learned that there was a lot more to it than that. But that took me down this rabbit hole of watching every single video I could find on woodworking, and started picking up the magazines and listening to the podcasts. And I just became really obsessed with it. And any chance that I could, I was down in the basement working, making little boxes or whatever. I was spending all my money on woodworking tools. And I started a Facebook page with a silly name called The Drunken Woodworker. Mm-hmm. And because of the silly name, I think people were starting to like my page and started following me. And I had a really good background in branding with working at the ad agency for so long.
Awesome.
That I probably came across as professional, and which I was a hack, total hack at that time. Uh-huh. But people were just liking me and asking me woodworking questions, and I really caught the bug and started a YouTube channel, and it just took off from there. So it was kind of by accident.
Wow.
That's awesome.
I'm kind of imagining you as being like the Jethro Gibbs from NCIS, kind of working, you know, doing your different projects. You know, he works on a boat in his in his basement. Well, no one knows how he gets it out of there, but but let's kind of step back a minute. I mean, you said you had when you were working at an ad agency, you were a videographer, doing marketing and doing the graphics and all that kinds of stuff. Like, have you always kind of had like that creative flair growing up, or
A little bit? You know, in high school, I would take art classes or woodshop, just so I wouldn't have to do other things. Mm-hmm. Just so I could get away from normal school activities. But I wasn't really into art or woodworking or anything. I wasn't. The only thing I really cared about in high school was just playing guitar and being in bands. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until like later on in my life that I really started to appreciate art and just making things with your hands. And it's it's just kind of funny how something just switched in my brain and I was like, I'm into this stuff now, and just threw myself into it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I, kind of in the same way, I, you know, in high school and even around there, I could sell my services. I didn't have, you know, problems working on people's computers and things like that. But as far as actually selling a thing, it's like, why would anybody ever want to buy anything from me? So
exactly,
you know, kind of like how you go from that mindset. It's like, well, why would anybody buy anything? And now it's like, well, if you think about it correctly, I'm offering a service, and you know, if people see value in that, then they'll give you the money for it. And likewise, you know, what you're saying there is something very similar. Again, it's something that when you were younger, you had no idea that later you would be able to, you know, enjoy something like that. It was just kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's all like you were asking, like, why would anybody buy something that I make or offer? And that's, you know, all part of the imposter syndrome. And the first thing you need to do is you need to believe in yourself and understand your abilities and skills. And once you start believing in yourself, that's when you can sell what you have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when you give yourself value.
True.
Right. So you took art classes in high school, I'm guessing just because.
Yes. Right.
Okay.
So I could hang out with the other art students and smoke in the woods behind the school.
Got it.
Oh,
got it.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't smoke anymore. I've,
good boy.
I'm trying to be much healthier these days.
Good. That's what I want to hear.
So, and then that took you, just for the hell of it, you ended up going into college for that?
So I graduated high school. This is way back in 93. And I got a job at Kmart. I had no plans at all to go to college. Mm. I didn't care about the future. I didn't think about the future. Mm-hmm. I was always about, at that time, it was always about right now. And right now, it was just hanging out with my, at that time, it was hanging out with my friends, playing music. And I worked at Kmart for like 7.5 years of my life. But about 4 to 5 years into that, I realized I can't work at Kmart for the rest of my life. I got to figure out what to do. So I went to school for graphic design because that seemed like the most fun subject. Not because I had any kind of desire or love drawing or creating. It's just like, that seems like an easy way to make a living, which turns out it's, you have to put a lot of work into it.
Sure.
who would have thought, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so 4 or 5 years in, I went to college, and I was like, I really, really enjoy advertising and branding and image.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those moments that I had that click in my brain, like, this is for me. This is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very similar to Charlotte's story a little bit there, Layla.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's like, cool. It's so exciting to hear those things. That's awesome. Like an epiphany. You mean apostrophe.
I have those like every 2-3 years, and I just completely change gears because I went to school for graphic design. And when I got out of school, my first job was developing film and color correcting photos for a newspaper. And so then I really got into photography at that point. And then, let's see, somewhere in there, I've always played music, and I met this guy who ran a recording studio, and we kind of hit it off, and I was like, I want to learn how to do this. And he's like, why don't you intern here? And so I just was like I just shadowed this other audio engineer for a whole year, and then I started taking on my own projects at the recording studio. And so, and then I picked up web development. And just because I was making websites for my own bands, and I got obsessed with web development, and then I just threw myself into that, and then I got a job as a web developer. So every 2-3 years, I just completely changed course and just become obsessed and try something new. So who knows if I'll still be making YouTube videos 2 years from now. I'm not sure what my next obsession is.
Yeah. Hard to predict, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, when I was going to school, electrical engineer, right? And Layla, I mean, crap. If you know anything about her story, I mean, she pretty much spent her entire life up until her first job trying to get her first job at NASA. And yeah, there's a long story behind that, and you know, people can check it out in our archive. But yeah, it's interesting how life will take those go around those corners on you. That's for sure.
Well, I mean, you can either look at it as a way to improve yourself, or you can go down the same path you've always gone and just if I didn't make those changes in my life, I would still be living check to check and probably working for somebody that I didn't like. And I don't know, I've just learned to take a chance every once in a while, and it's paid off.
That's well said. Very well said. That's great that you're just keep going at it. I'm reflecting a lot on what you said in the beginning, that you went down this path and then you found interest and you just went after it, and then another opportunity came and you went after that. So in a sense, you learn through your life lessons that you kind of need to grow up. You can't work at Kmart for the rest of your life. And you probably weren't going to listen to anybody who told you you had to figure out yourself.
I think the big motivating factor throughout all these changes was just trying to be happier. True. And at certain times, maybe making more money doing what I did. But I'm always searching for less stress and being happier. And that's sometimes you just have to believe in yourself and take a chance to make those things happen.
True. You said something that really resonated with me, and I don't know what the word is. I think it's called, I actually was listening to some motivational videos last night. And basically for someone to just kind of do what they're supposed to quote unquote do, or quote unquote supposed to do, and they're not happy, that's called emotional suicide.
Mm.
And it seems to me that you saw that as your life path at Kmart, and then you were doing something else while you were doing that, then that's when you realized, like, this is not good for me emotionally.
Yeah, right. And so, I mean, this emotional suicide, like, for me, you mentioned emotional suicide. For me, like, everything revolves around happiness. So when I quit my job at the agency a little over a year and a half ago, I still don't make as much money as when I worked at the agency. I make less. I know that real soon I'll be making more money. I know these things take time, but I've eliminated so many stressful things from my life, and I'm just so much happier. And I've recently learned that happiness is not how much money you make, but it's the environment that you put yourself in and your surroundings.
Understood. Now, did you always see your intent in woodworking becoming a business? Because you mentioned you're a photographer and you realize how much the frames would cost to make.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see that turning into a business? Initially, it was just for yourself.
Initially, it was for myself, but I was really into, when I got into woodworking, I think it was around 2011, I was really into like entrepreneurship, and I knew that I wanted to work for myself. And I was reading all the blogs at that time of like, you know, like working for yourself and executing that idea. And I thought, I really felt like I was going to come up with this amazing website idea that was going to make me rich and happy, and I could quit my job. And so I was always like looking for that idea. And when I picked up woodworking, it was just an accident that became the thing where I was able to quit my job. It was just kind of funny how everything just fell into place.
Yeah. It's amazing. You just don't. It's not what you planned to expect, but it happened, and that's
right.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, did you have any offline clients, and how did you get your first paying clients? Like, how did that interest of yours turn into a, hey, I'm getting something on the side?
Well, I didn't do too many woodworking projects, client-based woodworking projects. What I would do is I was doing a lot of freelance web development, so I had clients that way.
Okay.
And working with clients at the agency, I knew that I did not want to work for and make things for other people. Because whether you're employed or you're self-employed, when you make things for other people, they are your boss. And so what I would do is I would batch out a bunch of boxes or a wine display or picture frames, and I would sell them at craft shows because I'm still making what I want. And if you want to buy what I've already made, then you could do that.
Nice.
Yeah. And so I knew that eventually I need to get away from client-based work because they paid the bills, but clients can be stressful because they're supposedly always right.
Right. And that's all active work anyway. I mean,
yeah.
So weren't you doing that as a graphic designer in a sense? You were kind of doing that for people, I would imagine.
Oh yeah. I mean, I went to school for graphic design, and I was never the best graphic designer, but I found my way into the agency through web development, and just dealing with all those clients was stressful. I worked for a really, really awesome agency, and they were fantastic, but it was the clients that made the job stressful, and that's when I just knew that I don't want to offer services or make things for other people. I want people to come to me to watch me, and that's kind of where the YouTube thing came in for me, because most of my income comes from me making YouTube videos and either the AdSense off of that or me selling plans or the YouTube videos being sponsored.
And that's really cool because I'm actually trying to learn. I've made a lot of YouTube videos in the last 3 months. And so I'm actually trying to figure out how you can like earn on YouTube. But as far as your online business, were you ever a little worried about that people might call you out as a fraud? Or weren't you ever worried that people might see you as a newbie trying to make something that larger than what he really is? Because sometimes I get that too. Like, who are you to do fitness and health? And you're an engineer. You're not certified. So it's just kind of like, you know, you're not a, a second generation woodworker and da-da-da-da-da.
It's something I did worry about at first because I think my branding was so strong when I was called the Drunken Woodworker. I've since changed the name because I didn't know it was going to become my career, and I didn't know there would be kids involved. So I've changed the name from Drunken Woodworker to Make Something.
Yeah, but, I see that on your YouTube page because I was searching you that way. And actually, I kind of like the name Drunken Woodworker, but I see your point.
Right. So at first, I did feel kind of like, oh, why would people want to watch or learn from me? Who am I? And then, but as you may know, good branding adds this perceived value to what you do. And eventually, because I became so obsessed with woodworking and learning as much as I can, I became a good woodworker. And so, I mentioned confidence earlier. Once you have confidence in yourself, you can do anything. I mean, so like whether it's fitness or whatever, if you just believe in what you're doing, you'll figure out how to teach that to other people, right? And the best way to learn how to do something is to teach other people, because then you're kind of forced into this situation where, okay, if I want to look like an expert, I need to learn how to do this real quick. So,
true. And that's kind of reminds me of studying for in college. You learn by teaching.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you're using all your senses, and also you have an audience. It's like an accountability audience,
right? And for some reason, I still make videos on how to do things where I might not know how to do that right away, but I'll figure it out for the video. And sometimes in my videos, it's clear, like, this is my first time doing this. So you're watching me learn, and through me learning, you're learning. But for whatever reason, when you teach a skill to somebody else, it really, like, sets in and stays with you. Instead of, like, I mean, you could just watch videos or read books, but you don't retain all that information. But something stays in you when you try to teach that information to somebody else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's actually my first job out of college was actually teaching algebra, right? Mm-hmm. When I was in college and high school, I was horrible at algebra. And it was because I was trying to incorrectly learn it, or at least learn it in a way that was, you know, for me. And right. Like you, you know, I learned it by doing it over and over and over. And by the time that I was, you know, finally had, you know, been teaching it for 3 years or so, I was like, this is easy peasy. What's your problem?
Well, that's really cool. Now, and it's still called thedrunkenwoodworker.com, or did you also change that name?
I changed that as well. So if you went to drunkenwoodworker.com, it redirects you to makesomething.tv. And yeah, like I mentioned earlier, like, I didn't know that this was going to be my career. And I started getting emails from kids saying, hey, I watch your videos. I like what you do. You know, and they were asking me questions. And when I was starting to go to these different conferences, like, I had kids come up to me with their parents, and they're like, this is a drunken woodworker. And I was like, oh, this is embarrassing. So I knew pretty quick, I better change the name.
Well, did parents say anything about it, or they were just like, mm-hmm?
No parents ever said anything to me. I think they kind of understood. But I did get a couple, or a handful of emails from just random people saying, what you're doing is a disgrace to woodworking. You shouldn't be teaching people to woodwork while drunk. And of course, I would never, ever do that. I've always been crazy safe. So these people just assumed, without watching or reading my content, that I was this person that I wasn't. And so I got tired of that. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to clean this all up, and we're going to be a little bit more family friendly.
You can just call it the sober woodworker.
Yes, doesn't have quite the... It sounds like I'm a recovering addict.
Yeah, yeah. This is how I got through addiction. I make wood products.
Yeah.
But you could... That's actually a cool comeback. But I understand that, because you don't want to... You don't want to... Yeah. I mean, every time I hear that word, I'm thinking of the famous cheese, the drunken goat cheese. And that yes. is actually... It was an accident how it happened, the story behind how that happened, and it ends up being such a good cheese. So accidental woodworker could be another name too. But anyways, I like your name. It's awesome. And I think that's smart of you what you did. And, you know, and you, like you said, you're confident about that decision. And now I have a question as like you. So you wrote a book under that company called The New Bandsaw Box Book.
Yes.
What inspired you to write that book? I mean, it seems like a jump from woodworking to being an author, even from graphic design to writing. So how is that transition going? I mean, I don't even know how to write a book. So, like, did you have writing as a good, another good talent?
My grammar is absolutely awful.
Awesome.
I'm terrible
too.
At it. And it takes me a good 15 minutes to write a paragraph. But I'm getting better at it. But the publisher actually contacted me. They said, hey, we like your bandsaw boxes. And if you're not familiar with the bandsaw box, it's basically, it's a box. It's a small little decorative box that's made out of one large chunk of wood. And you cut a drawer out of it. And usually they're very like amoeba shaped. And they're a great entry into woodworking because it's really easy to do and you don't need a lot of tools. And so... I became known for my bandsaw boxes because I took a different approach. Instead of this free form shapes, I would bring in geometric shapes into them. And it's one of the things that kind of got me known in woodworking is like the boxes that I made. So this publisher contacted me and said, hey, we love your bandsaw boxes. Would you like to write a book? I'd never in my life thought I would ever be an author. And I said, yes, but by the way, I am terrible at writing. And they're like, don't worry about it. So I got to use my photography background. And so I photographed everything. And then I wrote all the cut lines for each photo. And then they went through and kind of corrected my grammar and kind of massaged the copy for it and everything. So it was all through just putting myself out there. And then somebody contacted me to write a book.
Oh, cool. Like a picture book. But it's a picture inform, like a how-to picture book.
Yes. So in the book, there are 8 different boxes. I think 8, maybe 7. Like how-to. And each one is just a step-by-step how to make this box. So it's more pictures than words, thank goodness.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I mean, I have dyslexia and ADD. Well, I mean, I think everyone's ADD. But I mean, I suck at writing, and I think that's because I have that engineering mindset. Stereotypical, we can't write. So I can't write. So, but that's awesome that an opportunity came for you. And because I, now that you explained the bandsaw box, I actually have one, and I see a lot of those in Colorado.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's so cool. I love them.
And there, it's just like if you ever want to get into woodworking, for many people, it's just that first project that they do, because really all you need is one large tool, and that's the bandsaw. Yeah. Or like if you want to make a cabinet, you might need a whole room full of tools. And so they're very popular with beginner woodworkers, and because they can be any shape, it allows you to be very creative, and they're fun to make, and they're fun to look at, even if you don't make them, because they can come in all shapes and sizes.
Nice. I will look at that, because I'm really curious to know how you can get that piece and cut it, and then the back part separated from the... I don't know. It's cool. So,
yeah. It's there's a little bit of trickery. Like
engineer in us. I'm like, how did... I mean, I'm a civil engineer, so I was like, how did he do it? Separate that piece and...
Oh yeah. See, so if you examine it, if you look up close and use your engineer mind, you'll see a little saw curve where they cut in, but then it's glued back shut. And if you cut with the grain, that initial cut is actually somewhat hidden. So there's a little bit of trickery in how the bandsaw boxes are made.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Got it. Go with the grain.
Go with the grain.
Cool. So, so now you're currently working with makesomething.tv, right? Mm-hmm. I guess the main thing that I'm kind of curious before we go into talking about YouTubing and your podcasting that you currently do. Why did you go with makesomething.tv? Is it because you wanted to like kind of talk more about than just wood stuff, or
it was again by accident. So in one of my videos, I just ended it with stay passionate and make something. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I kind of like that. So I started ending all my videos with stay passionate, make something. And then when I decided I need to change my name, I was sketching or writing down ideas for weeks and weeks, trying to figure out what to call myself. And right there, it was in front of me the entire time. I'm like, I'm just going to call my channel Make Something. Mm-hmm. And what that does is gets rid of the drunken word,
right. Yeah.
That some people didn't like. And it also opens it up where it's not just woodworking, it can be everything. Mm-hmm. And in the entrepreneurial space, we've been told for years and years, you need to find a niche, and mm-hmm. you have to funnel down into that niche if you want to be successful. And that does work with some things, but sometimes that niche is too narrow and you need to open it up a little bit. And so now I can do more than just woodworking. I can experiment with other things where I want to get into sewing. I want to get into leather work and metal work. And this, it opens up the doors, and I'm not pigeonholed into being a drunk woodworker anymore.
Right. Right. Well, and it's funny that you should even bring that up, because again, on Charlotte's conversation, we talked about niche marketing versus niche product design.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that Brendan Burchard recently said in one of his, I think it was called the Thought Leader's Blueprint. he said something along the lines of, you know, it's almost business suicide to make a business based off of a niche, because I mean, if you think about it, that, as you were saying, it's very recent that idea ever started occurring in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you go back to like the 1920s or 1930s, where the term niche market actually started, you know, being used, was around the time that, you know, vacuum cleaners were coming out. And so the reason why that phrase was actually came upon the marketing world is just because, okay, you have a vacuum. How are you going to market that vacuum to different niches?
Mm.
And so I think, and what he basically said is that a lot of people just kind of bastardize that thinking, work kind of reverse engineer it a little bit, maybe a little bit too much. And they're like, okay, just focus on that one market and then make all the products for them, as opposed to coming from the other way. So I like what you're saying there, because a lot of the bigger names out there, you know, they get started on one thing, which is what you did with woodworking, and then they broaden it out a bit. So yeah, that's cool.
So I think this is a really important question to ask you, because people listening to this podcast may want to ask you this, and that is, you make products and you have this interest of not making commissioned products. I don't know where that word is, but basically someone making an order or request and you design it for them like a graphic designer would.
Mm-hmm.
So you sell your woodworking items. Do you ever sell them on Etsy? Do you use it? Would you not use it for something like this?
Yes. So, and something has changed over the past year where I actually don't sell my crafts anymore. I'm usually all my products now. I don't even have products now. It's usually I'm making things for the house, or I'll make things and give it away. I have a room full of stuff that I want to give away that I'm going to use to build my email list. But when I was selling crafts, I did use Etsy, and Etsy was great for a period of time. And unfortunately, Etsy opened up their doors to manufactured goods. And when that happened, instead of there being, and I'm making up numbers, I don't know what the actual numbers are, instead of there being 200,000 people on Etsy, now there's millions of people on Etsy. And
oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so now you can have manufactured goods on Etsy, and so you kind of got lost in the search results because of that. And so Etsy is an easy way to sell something, but if you want to use Etsy, you have to use other, you have to rely on things outside of Etsy search, where you have to be very active on social media. You might need a blog, you might need a YouTube channel to drive people to your Etsy channel for sales.
Oh, I did not know that, because I'm thinking of starting one on the side.
Yeah, so just when you start doing some Etsy research, you'll see, like, 2 years ago they opened up their doors to manufactured goods, and the internet forums blew up with, you can't do that. But you just have to. That's another reason why you can't have all your eggs in one basket.
Sure.
Because especially if you're reliant on Etsy, or if you're relying on YouTube, they can change their terms of service. They could cancel your account for any reason whatsoever, and you need to figure out what to do if that happens. And so that's why I have my YouTube channel and my Facebook and my own blog, and I sell plans and I take sponsorships. I have money coming in from different sources in case one of those sources gets cut off.
Good point. I really am glad that you shared that with me, because it is, people do say, like, oh, I make a living off of this one source and I'm so grateful. And it's scary to know that you're dependent on another, I guess, corporation or organization that can easily make their decisions if they get money hungry.
Yeah. Or even worse, you could not knowingly violate the terms of service, or they may change the terms of service on you, and you may get kicked out because of something you didn't even know about, and they don't have to accept you back, or they don't, they can kick you out for any reason. So, you know, you just need to branch out and have multiple baskets.
Absolutely. Well said.
So, Dave, now you have two current ways of marketing and getting your content out there. One's through YouTube, and the other one's through your podcast entitled Making It.
Yes.
And that's with Bob Claggett, which is funny to me because that's actually a family name. C and JC stands for Claggett, so it's John Claggett.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny.
Oh, that's so cool.
And the other host is Jimmy DiResta.
Correct.
So let's get to the YouTube stuff real quick. Again, your background was in graphic design and videography and all that fun stuff. But how long have you been working with videos, I guess I should say? Because it seems to me that you really have a lot of quality in your videos. And just for me, as someone just starting out, it's like, man, that would take me forever.
Yeah, so I didn't have much of a background in video. Like I mentioned earlier, I've always enjoyed photography, or not always, but over the past 15 years, I've enjoyed photography.
Mm-hmm.
And the agency that I work for, we were very small. We had like 5 or 6 people, and we wanted to start making web videos. And because of my photography background, I'm like, hey, I'll shoot the video. And so we bought a bunch of gear, and I started shooting and learning how to edit. And then as the agency grew, I was 90% of what I did for the agency was web development, and the other 10 was video,
mm-hmm.
videography. And at first I was doing the shooting and editing. Then we hired this guy who actually knew how to edit, who's just mind-blowingly amazing at editing video. And, but I, up until I left, I was still the guy that shot everything. And so that translated very well to making YouTube videos. And when you go to school for graphic design, from day one, they pound in your brain that presentation is everything.
Mm-hmm.
So all of our graphic design assignments were like on mat board and presented. And a presentation was more important at times than the actual drawings or art that you did.
Right.
And so that kind of carried over into my YouTube video. Like, I want to make the best looking woodworking videos out there. I want to be better than the magazines and the woodworking companies doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just this thing for my own satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And it was adding to my branding. But the truth is, you don't need to have a bunch of fancy equipment to make YouTube videos. Some of the best YouTube channels out there is just people shooting with their phones.
Mm.
And so you don't need all the fancy equipment, but I enjoy using the fancy equipment, and I enjoy putting quality content out there.
Right.
But don't let that stop you from making YouTube videos.
Good point.
Do you think that has, I mean, obviously that's one of the reasons why you have a really decent followership, but what other kind of things do you think has led to that over the years? Actually, not even years, but...
Yeah, I've only been active on my YouTube channel for a couple of years, uh-huh. maybe 3 years, but... at first I created a show where I was highlighting other woodworkers.
Okay.
And so what that was doing was, every week I would pick 5 to 8 videos and highlight them and show what they're doing. And so what that would do is these other woodworkers that were getting on the show were sharing my videos.
Mm, okay.
And that it just kind of snowballed from there. And at a certain point, I had to end the show because I wanted to concentrate more on my projects. But giving away things and doing nice things for other people, like sharing their videos in my video, really helped me. Like, I was giving away plans mm-hmm. for the projects I was doing, and I was highlighting other people. So if you really want to jumpstart any kind of business, give something away. I think you mentioned that earlier. Just give away free stuff, and you'll get noticed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody will come for the free gift.
Right,
it's like a freemium.
Yes, and in the YouTube world, YouTube is free for everybody. So I can still give away all this content for free, and I have sponsors knocking on my door because of my subscriber base. They want to put their products in my videos, and so they give me, you know, a handful of money for me to promote their products. So you never know. I never knew I was going to have to talk business with these big tool companies or whoever to make a living. Like I mentioned earlier, I've always been pivoting, and I don't enjoy the business part of it. Yeah, but it's paying off.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing is that it definitely is something that comes with the territory. My one of the guys that, you know, I talk about on the blog quite a bit is America Multisport, and you know, we were talking about that. I forget. Earlier today, I was talking with someone about it, and one of the things that comes along with success, as you were saying, is, you know, these big companies wanting to use you as a storefront. And it's like, I mean, you know, you look at someone like Pat Flynn, again, he comes up into the conversation as, you know, an example of someone you can be like, or amongst the many people that he knows over the years that have kind of sold out. And yeah, I mean, there's definitely difficult decisions that you have to make as you're going down the path. So
yeah, if you, as long as you find something that you're really passionate about, people are drawn to that, and you can, if you're super passionate about it and you're willing to, you can find ways to make a living from your passions, and it just happened to work out for me.
That's good.
Good point.
So Bob and Jimmy are your co-host. How did your group come together, and like how did that get started?
Yeah, so Bob and Jimmy actually have way bigger channels than me.
Really?
And they have way more followers than me. Yeah, I mean, Bob is I think over 500,000 now, and Jimmy's pretty close.
Mm.
So we didn't really know each other, but a fan of all three of ours tagged us in a Facebook comment saying, "You guys should start a podcast." And we're like, "Huh, that'd be fun." And an email was floating around, and we're kind of like, "Hey, do you guys want to do that?" And like, "Sure, we'll don't know how, but we'll figure it out." And the podcast is called Making It, and it's just three makers. Like, I'm a woodworker, Jimmy is a metal worker, and Bob kind of like does all kinds of crazy things. Sometimes it involves electronics and stuff. And so we all have different backgrounds, and we all make different types of videos and approach the way we make our videos very different. And so that's what makes it work, is three guys who with different backgrounds just talking about making things and overcoming obstacles. And we also talk a little bit about the behind the scenes, like what goes on in being a YouTuber.
Ah, cool. Who's in charge of the production of all that?
So I do all the audio editing. We all have different jobs. Uh-huh. So Bob handles the post. So we have a website. So Bob gets all the show notes together and posts it. I do all the editing, and Jimmy's the rock star.
Gotcha. So how do you manage to do so much in a given week? Because it seems like you got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, there's always something going on. I don't like downtime, so even when we're watching TV or movie, I have my laptop out and I'm doing the social media thing or I'm designing the next project. I think I was kind of like a lazy kid, and now if I don't have four things going on at the same time, I feel incomplete. I get anxious,
right?
And so plus, if I'm not making videos, if I'm not making the podcast, I'm not paying the bills. So if I,
all right, oh yeah.
If I want to eat, I need to always be doing something. So I just enjoy being crazy busy.
Okay, so you got a little bit of Gary Vee in you, huh?
Yeah, a little bit of Gary Vee in me. Yes.
So since you are the producer of the show, do you have any tips or tactics that you would give to baby podcasters?
Yes. just keep doing it and you get better over time. So what I've learned, if I like go back and listen to the first few episodes, there's like a lot of dead air and a lot of ums, and I say there's certain words that I just overuse. So I go back and I listen to each episode and I kind of take note on what I can improve on. I still don't have that like super awesome like radio quality personality, but I'm getting better with each episode. I think we have 64 episodes now. Nice. So it's one of those things you learn by doing. Just do it and you'll figure it out as you go.
Well said.
Yes. Nice. And I mean, it goes with anything. Like, if you're thinking about making YouTube videos, or if you're thinking about selling on Etsy, stop thinking about it and just do it. And you'll learn the best way. Maybe the first YouTube video that you make is going to be pretty crappy, but you'll learn from it, and people are going to give you feedback. Sometimes that feedback isn't so nice, because YouTube comments can be mean sometimes. But yeah, you learn by doing.
Right? I thought all comments on YouTube were mean.
Yeah, well, I mean, I started doing a lot of YouTubing lately. In the last 3 months, I've made like 30 videos now, and now I'm going back to all my videos, and I am actually making a cover page for them. I'm coming up with a nice like template to add my, you know, social media networks, and so it's like, you're right. And then I was telling JC, like, I think I need to get a Final Cut. Like a new, I've been using iMovie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like you have to work with what you have. And once you build, you can add on. But someone told me you can't be 100% ready and launch, or else you'll never get there.
Yeah. And that is so, so true. Just throw it, like if you're making YouTube videos and you really hate your first ones, you can delete them. But you have to get started. You have to at least put something out there to gauge what you need to do next.
True. And even I actually think you shouldn't delete them, because if you are so high up, people want to see, like, what was your first YouTube video like? You know?
Right. I have deleted some of mine because they were just so awful.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get that point too, because I'm still still learning, and yeah, the lighting is not as great, and you're right, like, I don't have the best equipment. I'm using my MacBook, my iPhone, and for video recording.
Mm-hmm.
I know people use like the Canon D5, but yeah.
You don't have to get caught up in all the equipment, mm-hmm. although it is fun for me to get caught up in that.
Yeah, me too.
But you don't let that stop you. Don't let that intimidate you.
Okay. So you talked about what you've done and where it's led you. But now, moving forward, what are your future plans and goals and upcoming projects?
Well, I don't think too far ahead, which might go against what a lot of entrepreneurs might think. So I'm only thinking like in the next 2 or 3 weeks ahead. So I know, like, I went to the antique store and I picked up this clock. So I'm going to take this clock and I'm going to gut it and I'm going to give it a new case. So it's this old, looks like 60s or 70s clock, and I'm going to upcycle it, make a new shell for it. And I know I'm going to do that. I have a dog handicap ramp that I need to make. And so I know those are going to be my next two videos. But from there, I don't know where I'm going to go, because I still live in the moment. I have a huge list of projects that I want to get to someday, but what happens is when I finish one project, I just look at that list, and whatever on that list inspires me, that's what I make next. And so as far as like goals, I don't know what my goals are too much, besides just keep growing my channel and waiting for that next big thing to happen. Like I said earlier, who knows if I'll be YouTubing 3 years from now. I probably will, but I'm always open to the idea of something else.
Yes.
I get really obsessed with things, and I just change my mind on what I want to do all the time.
That makes people excited. It's like, oh, what's the next thing he's going to do next? You know? What's and the... And then? And then?
I get so much excitement from not knowing what's
Sorry,
next.
I got excited for you. but that's good because you don't, it's kind of like me where, and that's kind of how I was for 25 years. Like I had my mind set in stone to work at NASA and that was really, really hard for me to say like, well, that was the plan. So now it's like, I don't like to say this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. It's like, this is what I like to do currently. And it sounds, yeah. And I would say people might want to connect with you better because they're like, oh, he's a normal person. Things change.
Yes.
Stuff happens. Well,
there's also like, we put so much focus on goals that like you can't find happiness in the goals. You have to find happiness on the road to that goal. Because what happens was when you reach that goal, you're happy, you're excited, you feel great, but then that goes away because now you got to move on to the next thing, and you got to start all over. So I try to find happiness in the path to the goal instead of the end, instead of finding happiness at the end.
I see. So you can't find happiness in goals; you find happiness on your way to the goal.
Yes.
Cool. That's really well said. I have some rapid fire questions for you, Dave. And what are three truths that you have found out over the years that you would like to share with other people?
Mm.
Three truths. Three.
Three truths.
Yeah.
And rapid fire, three truths. Happiness is super important to me. I should say, you know what? Happiness has always been important to me, but removing stress is something I never thought about until recently. So that's one. Like, I never thought about stress until a few years ago. And now that's like, I gotta get rid of that. Another truth is that if you do good, good things will happen to you. And that everybody says that, but it's so, so true. If you help others, you'll find that it comes back to you. And number three. Oh man,
yeah.
This is tough. Yeah. This is a hard rapid fire question because I don't know what that other truth is. Be willing. Just the truth is like live in the now. That's a tough question.
Be present.
Yes.
So kind of like, be present, be realistic. It's kind of like it's. You're right because it kind of goes with what you were saying. Is don't put everything in stone. You know, you can't find happiness in the goals you find. You find happiness in the way to the goal. So be present.
Yes.
Don't say I'll be happy when I'm done with this.
Right.
Well, I'm going to be happy on my way to doing this.
Yes. You know, there's the one thing that's always kind of bothered me, and I forget what the phrase is that Pat Flynn says at the beginning of his podcast, but it was something like, and maybe you can correct me, but put all the hard work in now so you can
reap the benefits later.
Yeah, later. And that has never resonated with me. I want to have all those benefits now, right? And I don't ever see myself retiring because I love what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all about now. It's not, I don't want to think too much about the future. Just enough to know that I can put food on the table and that me and my wife and my wiener dog are happy. But
well,
live now.
You know, and it's funny that you should even bring that up because like I have been kind of talking with Mark Nathan more recently, and we're looking at possibly kind of having a mega launch of the book that he was on the podcast for. And what's interesting is that even since he's been financially free since the age of 27, not having to work another day in his life, he is what I think 33. I think he's a year younger than I am. And he chooses to keep busy as he ever was, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just something that he can't get out of his system.
It's
why should
because
he get
you
it
enjoy
out,
it?
Why should he get it out of his system?
Well, the thing is because I think that a lot of people, what Dave was saying is that, you know, people listen to Pat or start listening to Pat because they more or less might hate their day job or something is wrong with their life. And they're like, man, if I could just, you know, have the money issue taken care of forever, then my life will be okay. And I think that's what that phrase of his says, mm-hmm. is that, well, sure, I can put the time in now and that'll be always taken care of. But people don't realize that the reason that most people do their day job is because they're trying to get that income, and they don't think right. about when they have that income, what they're going to do then.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess I could add on to that, because I was making a six-figure salary last year, or let's say 9 months ago, and I'm happiest than I've ever been. But even if I have all the money, I still need to keep myself busy. I still need to do something to keep me going. And, you know, I kind of go back to NASA again. I mean, people who retired after working there for 60 plus years, let's say 50, okay. that is true. There are people that did work 50 years. A mentor of mine told me this, and he said, you know, if you retire at a young age so you can still keep yourself active. Don't retire to the point where you can't walk anymore, or you can't travel anymore, or do anything with your life productive. You have mm-hmm. to always keep yourself productive. And he gave me examples of people who did retire at the age of 75, above. They died 6 months later because they had nothing to do.
They had nothing to do. And
they got depressed because they couldn't go back to work, and they lost a connection of their purpose, because that was their hobby and everything, but that was their passion.
Yeah, and luckily for me, I work for myself, and so I don't think I'll ever retire. Hopefully I'm still creating and making things up until the end, because I've already retired. I just don't have a huge savings, but I've retired from working for somebody else. Now I get to do what I want to do, and the challenge for me is to find ways to pay the bills and to keep things fresh and to keep people coming to my website or to my channel.
Yeah. So basically, in a sense, you would consider retirement in a sense of you are in a sense retired because you are making the income. You're not working for somebody. You are in control of your own schedule. Young and free that's the kind of sense.
Yeah.
Young and free.
Love Young it. And free.
So next rapid fire question.
Okay. So what are your three favorite teachers or / influencers? Something in creative, business, or otherwise. Like, who would you consider your three favorite teachers or influencers?
One is the husband and wife team of Ray and Charles Eames. They made some of the best furniture back in the 50s and 60s. Their work is just really, really inspiring to me because it was so unique and so creative. Two, I would say Jack White of White Stripes, Third Man Records fame. He's a musician. He was sung and played guitar in the band White Stripes, and now owns a record store and a record label. And what I love about him is the music industry changes so much, and he's able to come up with new ideas because he has to thrive in a world where people aren't buying music. And so he started this record label, and they put out vinyl records of bands on their label. And vinyl records has been making a comeback for the last 10 years. But he's doing like unique things, like with these records that nobody's done before. There's like some things, there's like hidden tracks on a record that's actually on the label, or there's things embedded into the record that's like a visual thing that you can see. And like, he's innovative in music, and I just love that. and he's always looking to do something new and something that nobody else has done before.
Gotta ask you real quick, since you're kind of in, sounds like you're into that world, any idea why Slim Shady would have released his LP and cassette recently?
Cassettes are making a comeback. They're
hot
right
now. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I did not know that he did that, but to me, I'm like, oh, that is so cool, because it brings back
the 90s.
It brings back the 90s and making mixtapes and like finding that person that you're attracted to and you make a mixtape for them, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's so cool. So I do see cassettes have slowly been making a comeback, and I do see them kind of exploding in the next few years.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
Another influencer teacher. You always ask for things in threes. Makes things tough. So I would say author Kurt Vonnegut.
Oh.
Because his writing was so different from everybody else in his time, and he just, when I read his books or read articles that he wrote, he just seems like he was smarter than everybody else around him. And I just loved the way he looked at things in his life. I love that he was so different and took a different approach to writing. So I guess I'm attracted to people who do things different than everybody else.
Okay. I have another one. What would you tell the 18-year-old version of yourself?
Stop being lazy and do something with your life. I didn't have a lot of ambition at that time, except playing music and being in bands. And I think I would actually, like, that's okay. I think, but I would tell myself, like, you should have got really good at playing guitar or really good at singing, and you should have really be. I love playing in bands, but I was never passionate. I never like took it to like the next level as I did, you know, in my 30s. So I would just tell myself, yeah, find a passion and go for it.
Good. What does success mean to you, Dave?
Happiness. That's all. I mean, it's just removing stress and just being happy. Simple as that.
So, who is the first person that comes to mind when you give that description, and why?
My wife, of course. Like, she's the one who saw me stressed out at my day job, and she's like, why can't you make YouTube videos for a living? And we just sat down one night and we figured out all of our expenses, and we figured out all the things that we could get rid of if we had to. Like, we don't need Netflix and Hulu and this and that and this. And so, like, we can eliminate these things so you can be happier. So she is the reason I am doing what I want to do.
Nice.
Cool. You got rid of Netflix and Hulu?
No, well, if we had to, we didn't. we never had
way,
to.
But
yeah, it's funny. Like, when you are forced into a situation where you need to make it work, like, I quit my job and all of a sudden I have to make this YouTube thing work, you figure out ways to do that. Like, that's why I always tell people, quit putting things off and just do it. What's the worst that could happen?
True. Very true. You know?
And luckily, thank goodness, we never had to get rid of Netflix or Hulu.
Yeah, I got rid of cable. We got rid of a lot of things. We even sold a lot of our stuff. I'm selling my stuff on three different online resources, minimizing and downsizing tremendously. And even next month, we're downsizing our apartment. So,
are you familiar with the book, The Art of Tidying Up?
Yes, Marie Kondo method. I'm doing it right now. I'm folding all my clothes to Marie Kondo.
That book changed my life.
It did. I love it. Sorry. When you said it, I knew exactly what you're talking about. The Marie Kondo method. I freaking love her.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that changed my life, and I've gotten rid of so many clothes.
Yep. And
yeah.
I got it.
Sorry. Got excited. I thought only girls were into that, not guys.
Oh, man. I've been preaching this book for months now. Like, we just have too much stuff. You don't need it all. Just simplify.
Yes, yeah. It's a different type of minimizing. It's like, it's, does it make me happy? Get rid of it. If it's not, get rid of it. Why?
Pick up an item, hold it. Does it bring you happiness? If not, you don't need it.
There you go.
Man, because of that, because of that book, I threw away like 10 pounds of old photographs that I've just been collecting forever. And I was like, why do I have all these old photographs? Like, when I die, somebody, it's just going to become somebody's problem, like she says in the book. And it felt good just to get rid of all of it.
Yeah.
And photographs are hard to get rid
of. That's hard for me, too. I'm a memory hoarder.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
True.
That's interesting. Yeah, I am one nostalgic SOB, so that might be, yeah, that's, I don't know, I've always been interested in how people can be minimalists, but, you know, I like, kind of like how you were talking about living in the past and why people would buy, you know, cassettes now or even vinyl. It's right. Like, for me, it's like, well, hell, here, look, here's an original Beatles, you know, Yellow Submarine album.
Right, right.
So, anyway, so as we're going off here, what are some of the resources or you know, things that people can listen to that if they wanted to start being a maker with a business online, what would you suggest?
I think there's always this fear of making YouTube videos, and so there's a channel called Video Creators, hosted by Tim Schmoyer. Mm-hmm. And it's a tremendous resource for how to present yourself on camera, shooting things on a budget, communicating with people, how to monetize your YouTube channel. And that's called Video Creators. Mm-hmm. Amazing channel and website. And he sells ebooks too, and it's really good. Of course, Pat Flynn, this podcast. I mean, we're all listening and watching the same things. I think it's just, it's all a matter of execution. You can listen to every single Pat Flynn
episode. Oh yeah. No, you
can't.
Yeah.
If you don't execute, it's all worthless.
Yeah. It's just all entertainment at that point, which is unfortunate. Yep. Yeah. So, all right, man, Dave, it was definitely a pleasure to have you on the show. If people want to find out more about you, where can they go?
You can hit me up at makesomething.tv. That has the link to all my social media networks, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm pretty active on all those things. And also a link to my YouTube channel. So makesomething.tv.
All right.
Cool. Nice.
Well,
thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was fun.
Thanks.
Take care.
Later on.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Dave Picciuto. Again, Dave, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate what you got going on over there at Make Something. It's really awesome. I'm definitely going to be taking more interest in your work, and especially since you know, you have such a rich background in video making, maybe I'll be able to pick up a few pointers from you. Again, you can check Dave out at makesomething.tv. From there, you can connect with him through multiple social media accounts, including his YouTube channel, Facebook, and Twitter. I'll be sure to have some of those in the show notes. Make sure you give him a shout and tell him that you heard him on the show and that you'll be checking out his stuff if you liked today's show. I also want to let you know that the show notes for this show are available with all the links and resources at newinceptions.com/session32. Show note extras for this session include some useful resources that will help you explore David's world a little bit more. Some hand-picked videos of his include Ask Me Whatever number 3, which come from his series called Ask Me Whatever. The next one on the list is the one that reminded me to get in contact with him, How to Price Your Work. I think it can help anyone in business. The third one is his shop tour, done in the style of a show I used to watch all the time called MTV Cribs. You might be familiar with that show. And today's final link is a link to his podcast with Bob Claggett and Jimmy DiResta. This particular episode is called $2,000 to Start Over, and in it they discuss how they'd start their new shops if they had $2,000. So thank you again for listening today. I really appreciate you and your time and getting a chance to helping you become the next successful creative entrepreneur. We have several amazing episodes coming up, including the next two that are power women entrepreneurs in their own right. The first is AJ Klingerman. She's a local here in Indy that with her husband runs a martial arts school. They started the Indiana Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy in the early 2000s and now have several online courses available. While her husband is the main instructor, she is the brains behind the business side of things. Having been influenced by Dan Kennedy, she also does business coaching around the city as well. After that, we have an exciting one where we host no other than Steph Crowder from Fizzle. I know you guys have been hearing me talk about Fizzle for so long now. I wanted to get someone from the gang actually on the show so you could hear for yourself what's in there. Not only that, but she talks about her first year being involved with the company and why she appreciates, like last week's guest, Brian, being an entrepreneur. So until then, I really look forward to helping you guys via the blogs and some of the old podcasts. Check out the site at newinceptions.com and feel free to shoot us an email via heyguys@newinceptions.com if you have any questions about the show, posts, or have an idea for a future guest. So to be sure to share this session with someone you think might get something out of it. You know, I got to tell you, we had the most listens ever in last week's show with Brian. We really appreciate you guys passing it around, and don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. Also, besides being able to subscribe on Stitcher, SoundCloud, and iTunes, we are now listed on Google Play Music. So if you have an Android device, check us out on there. Remember that our goal at New Inceptions is to give more than just advice. We want to support you in any work you feel defines you. So be sure to let us know how we can help you even more. So I think that's pretty much about it this week. Go check out the show notes at newinceptions.com/session32 if you want to see more of David. And until next time, keep doing the work you're meant to do. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web @newinceptions.com.